my body was starting to shut down, and it was going into like, if you've ever had an anxiety attack, it was like an anxiety attack on steroids. It was just, I just knew I was going to die. I felt that. And I was praying to God, you know, God, please, you know, save me, you know, get me out of this situation.
Are you ready to unlock conversations of resilience, triumph, and transformation? Well, you're in the right place. This is the Knocking Doors Down podcast. Your host, Jason LaChance, where we dive deep into the journeys of those who have overcome life's toughest challenges and are sharing their experience, knowledge, and insight into how you can do just the same. If you're checking out the podcast for the first time, hit that subscribe button on whatever platform you're listening on, or hey, if you're on YouTube, hit that subscribe button, leave a thumb up and a comment on the video, because not only do I see it, but so do my guests. And my guest is Stephen Piazza. Stephen and I go back about 20 years to when Stephen was in various bands, signed up all kinds of different developmental contracts, opening for bands such as Crossfade, Lit, Blue Oyster Cult, Great White, Smile Empty Soul, and the list goes on and on. However, June 12th of 2020, Stephen nearly died from his addiction. It was in that moment that he turned himself over to a higher power, exploring his faith in Christianity. Now, a Christian musician, sharing his message and journey with others. Stephen and I get into all kinds of stuff, like what his upbringing was like and when his substance abuse and use really started. And when he was living the rock and roll life, Stephen thought he had joined the 27 Club with Jimi Hendrix, Jim Morrison, Janis Joplin, and Kurt Cobain, who all died at that same age. Now, in his recovery journey, Stephen respects that so many rock stars that he and I and so many were fans of share their sober and recovery journeys. As well, Stephen does ride sharing to help people out. Some of those people, well, they go to methadone clinics. Stephen gives insight onto his perspective and what those individuals that he gives rides to share. As well, how did Stephen's faith lead him back to music and becoming a Christian artist? We discuss all this and so much more on this episode of Knocking Doors Down. For more on Stephen Piazza, go to stephenpiazzanow.com. Stephen Piazza, thank you for joining me on Knocking Doors Down.
Man, thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Oh, appreciate it. Hey, no, my honor. And I want to kind of premise this for people is just the trippy way that life works. You know, we 16, 17, 18 years ago met. We both weren't living life in the way that would generate some longevity. And then
right.
Both found sobriety, our faith. Of course, we're both Christians, so we'll probably get into that.
And, yeah.
But I want to start with gratitude.
Yeah.
I'm big on gratitude every morning. So three things you're grateful for today.
Well, just what you were saying, it's we were living a different lifestyle. It's a miracle that I'm alive today, just living in the fast lane for so long. So just grateful to be here, and I'm grateful that God's given me a second chance at life, and that I'm doing the right thing. And so hopefully people can see that, you know, the way I live my life is for Jesus Christ. And yeah, that's what I'm grateful for.
That doing the right thing. Tell me your opinion. It's a little underrated in society right now, like the doing the right thing. I don't.
You mean swallowing a pot of soap isn't the right thing to do?
Right?
Go on TikTok and, you know, possibly die, but you'll look cool.
Yeah. Is it like, I don't know, are people attention starved? Do you think it's because of the way like social media is so readily available and prevalent that it's that shift of it?
I think they just want to get that shock factor moment, and, you know, so they can get the views. Like, views, getting views is the most important thing. People will go beyond, you know, they'll do whatever to get the views. So
that convolution of attention equals love, and that's not the way it works.
No.
we're living life. We got some attention.
Yeah,
we got some handcuffs put on.
Yeah. I'm in a hospital bed, and but I got the views.
Let's jump back. Kind of what little Stephen was like growing up, what was life, you know, parents, siblings, any of that? What was
So I grew up in the church. My mom was a preacher's kid. And so I was raised pretty strict upbringing, but we were at church Wednesday, Friday, Sunday night, and had a really good upbringing. My dad worked like three jobs, you know, just to make ends meet. And we grew up in San Jose, California. And I had a great upbringing. And then once I started to get 16, 17, you know, the devil horns came out and I started being a little rebellious, and, my parents were thinking of maybe sending me to, military school. I mean, it got bad.
Really?
Yeah. So I got kicked out, then I moved out, then I moved back, and then I moved out on my own, and then I moved back. But yeah, I was kind of a problem child, 16, 17. And then I straightened up. And then probably around 22, again, I started getting into the music scene. And then, you know, living that fast lane life, you're just asking for trouble. And when I was an alcoholic for so many years, you know, I wasn't making the right or the best decisions, I'll say. I remember I was living in LA and I was living with a girl down there. And I was like, I'm the next best thing. I'm going to be rock star, you know? Yeah. And so me and my friend were down in Newport Beach and we were partying. We were bar hopping from bar to bar to bar. And we met this couple at the end of a bar and we were going to go back to their house and get stoned and, you know, drink or party, you know, do what we were doing. And on the way back to the car, I was being loud Steve and someone called the cops on us. And so we were driving, she was driving, I was in the passenger seat and I had this little tiny little guitar and I was just in my own little world, and we get pulled over and Debbie was her name. She's talking to the cops. And the only thing I could think of was, man, Debbie, tell them we got to go. Cause we got these people we got to go party with. So I had said, you know, Debbie, tell them we got to go. And the cop says, sir, you're going to have to be quiet. And so that worked for about, you know, 30 seconds. And in my brain, I'm still thinking, man, we are missing out on partying with these folks, you know? So I said it again. And the cop said, sir, I'm not going to tell you again. And so another minute goes by, I said it again. And he walks over and he's like, sir, you're going to have to get out of the car. And I looked at him and I go, do you know who I am? He goes, no, who are you? And I go, well, you know who Axl Rose is? And he goes, yeah, he sings for Guns N' Roses. I say, yeah, well, I want you to think bigger. And he goes, well, I'm going to want you to get out of the car and put your hands behind your back. So, I mean, I was living in the fast lane, making some bad choices. Alcohol, I thought, you know, I'm going to get into music and I'm going to be the next best thing. Wow, reality just smacked me in the face. I was like, that's not how it's going to work, Steve. So,
well, it's interesting you say like 16, 17, because I think that's the point. You know, what differs for me, you know, I grew up in a home of addiction and my dad at that time wasn't there. So, like, I never had the things that my friends had where it was kind of the butting heads with dad stuff. Like I just never had it,
right?
So I think maybe that's why I was a late bloomer. Like there is some of that angst of, you know, rejecting the ways that you raised and all this. It's a, I don't know, part of that exploration, that hero's journey or whatever you call it. It's really kind of interesting. But then you also mentioned like 22, 23, you know, our brain's getting closer to maturing.
Right.
So a lot of that bull that's stored up there and starts to take over.
Right. Yeah. And my parents being as strict as they were, I think, you know, all that time I was like, well, I want to go see for myself what it's right. like out there. And then, yeah, it was a rude awakening. I mean, I had fun, but sure. that was for a season. And then that season was like, oh, I'm in jail again. Oh man, I gotta, you know, maybe I should do something else with my life. Turn this around.
Oh, also it was multiple times.
Multiple times. Yeah. Oh, not, Lord. not, not proud of it, but I will say the Newport Beach jail was by far the cleanest jail I've ever been in. So
I'm gonna tell you, the county we're in now, it's not.
No.
I literally remember being in there and some guy going, "Hey, young blood," and I just look at him, "How's it going?" He goes, "You know, you don't belong here." And it's weird that I still remember that. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, yeah, you know, and at the time I was making all the excuses and he, I don't remember his exact wording, but it's essentially, yeah, I've heard that all before.
Mm.
You don't belong here.
Right.
And it was like, okay, yeah, I, you know, I'm in tears crying.
Right.
Like, how did I get here? And, you know,
how old were you?
27, I think. And then I, you know, got bailed out and all that stuff. And then the issues, you know, dealing with the courts and all that. And then, you know, that like, yeah, fun hey, stuff. That stuff, it racks. It was like 10 grand that I didn't have, you know.
Yeah.
Somehow found my way, you know. It was that work ethic kicked in. Okay, I'll find as much extra work wherever as I can. You know, working in radio at the time, not exactly a career path for millionaire status. So yeah, it's weird how like I found for me, you know, and I underwent some trauma that I've shared with you that everybody that's listened frequently knows. And it was I really had someone pinpoint for me that brain maturation point that like, hey, people think, okay, the brain comes to full fruition and you're good in logical thinking, but hey, those traumas and those underlying things also do as well.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how for you it was just like, mom, dad, you don't know what you're talking about. I'm going to explore the world.
Right.
And oftentimes those people that we put as heroes, you and I having some of those same rock star heroes, well, that's not the best life. Some of our heroes are dead now.
Yeah, a lot of them.
Yeah.
What was it 26 or 27 club where Jimi Hendrix and
Kurt Cobain.
I mean, there's a ton
Jim
of them.
Morrison was
Janis Joplin.
Yeah, weren't they all like 27?
27 club, I think they call it. Yeah. So thank God I didn't join that club.
Yeah.
God had a different plan. So thank God for that.
You went what, into your 30s before so?
Yeah, I didn't mature till late in life. Sad to say, but I was mid 30s before I matured. I didn't get sober until 6/12/2020, and that's why I wear this cross. It has the date on it where I almost died. But they say guys mature later in life. I mean, that was an understatement when it came to me. I didn't mature until late. I was like, I'm just gonna, you know, drink until I pass out every night for, you know, and go to work. That was my, you know, mature thinking. Well, as long as I have a job and I can pay the bills,
right?
You know, I thought that was being mature, but you know.
Well, there's a lot of justification around for people that struggle with substance use, abuse, addiction around it. I mean, I know mine was. I was probably a little differing from you in that I lived with just a tremendous amount of victim mentality, which, I mean, is it driven through ego? Probably, because I'm also a recovering people pleaser.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, you know, a lot of people don't examine that as being egotistical. It's like, oh, you're a pushover or whatever. No, I made sure that I changed to suit whatever worked for other people. That's like the greatest level of manipulation. Mm-hmm. I was a chameleon. Like, that's, you know, there's people now that I'll bump into in 2 minutes in conversation like, oh, you think I'm still that person, you know?
Right.
So it's fascinating that when that shift starts to come.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you think all of yours was connected to the story you told yourself about yourself? Like that, like you told the cop, like, don't you know who I am?
You know,
like Axl Rose, but bigger.
Knocking Doors Down by Carlos Vieira. Now available wherever you get audiobooks.
I wasn't done partying, and I didn't want the binge to end. I think I knew that when I finally got home, I'd have to face what I had done, and I wasn't ready to do that. Being responsible for my actions wasn't something I was looking forward to. I had abandoned my wife and baby, my family, and my business. I wanted to avoid the shame of returning to what I had left behind. Even though I was not yet going home, I wasn't sure I had enough resources to continue the binge.
Click the link in the podcast description to find out more.
Well, I think a lot of it was, you know, trying to be, wanting people to accept me. You know, it's like, I want to fit in. I want to be the cool person. I want to, you know, and then, you know, when I had my life changing moment in life, it was like, I don't really care anymore what people think, yeah. Not in a bad way, but in a way that I'm not going to live my life to get likes or something like some of these people on social media. It's like, do you see what you're doing? If you could take a look at yourself through a different lens and see that, you know, you're just trying to please others or trying to get attention, be yourself and, you know, do what you love to do and stuff like that. And I think once I stopped worrying about what people thought, I was like, now I'm getting somewhere. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Oh, it's imperative. I think it was when Brandon Novak and talking to him on here, and he said, and I'll quote him, he said, you know, when I attempted to make my amends or apologize to people, what they thought of me afterwards, it's none of my business.
Right.
And it's such a, you know, that sounds like, yeah, like you're being a jerk, but in reality, it's incredibly freeing.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, I literally don't have to wake up looking external of myself,
right,
to like me, feel good about what I right. do or anything else. It's not only a mental and emotional shift for me, it was a huge spiritual shift. The more I do to be right by and for God, like, I'm good.
Yeah. As long as he accepts, I know God accepts me, you know, he accepts me at my worst, you know, when I was living that, you know, lifestyle of where I didn't care, long hair, didn't care, you know, almost my butt, you know, and I did, that was my motto. I, you know, I don't care. God still loved me the same as he does now, which is unconditional. And, but now knowing that, as long as God accepts me, I don't have to worry about other people accepting me, you know, they're going to accept me or not, you know, my life's not going to change the way I keep living it, you know, which is for him. So,
yeah. Well, and you know, I mean, Mary, now it's like the missus isn't going to like, right. Hey, they don't need you to, and they're not going to put up with any BS bravado and try right. to project something that you're not. It's like, that's like when you know you're in a good place.
Yep. At the end of the day, I'm going home to my wife who loves me. And my dog and my three cats and, you know, and God loves me. So, you know, yeah. Life's great.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, when then was kind of that, you mentioned the date on your cross.
Yeah.
What was that pinnacle? I mean, where were you at in life? What was going on when it was this is it?
Like, yeah.
I surrender.
Yeah. So I was an alcoholic for about 25 years or plus, and I would drink a handle of vodka a night almost. It's a miracle that my insides are still functioning normal. It is a miracle because I do ride sharing as well. And I drive some of these people to dialysis and I'm like, God, this could have been me, you yeah. know? And it still can be, you know what I mean? It's for as much as damage that I've done. But yeah, I was drinking a handle a night and I would not just have one or two. Obviously I'd drink until I passed out. And wake up the next morning and, man, do I need to apologize to some people? You know, you just don't remember. That's one of the worst things. Yeah. You just black out. And then I notice, you know, when I wake up in the morning, it looks like I got hit by a Mack truck. And so it's like, I did that. And one day I was up in Reno, Nevada. But before I get to that, I tried to quit on my own. And I tried to, you know, stop drinking for a night. Well, when your body has the alcohol every night, it expects that. So I couldn't go to sleep. I think my body was saying, you know, I need alcohol to go to sleep. What are you doing to me, Steve?
Yeah.
And then I'd, you know, struggle through that night, and the next night would come and it'd be like, now I'm getting the shakes. Like I can't stop shaking. And your body's saying, brother, you got to hook me up here. I'm not sleeping. I'm now getting the shakes. Are you going to feed me some of this or what? And so then I'd have a drink. So I couldn't go like more than 2 or 3 days. I think 3 days is the most I went, which is ridiculous. So I was up in Reno and I was partying with this couple up there and we were doing cocaine, which the cocaine, I know cocaine is white. This was a little yellowish. So I'm not sure if it was laced with a hallucinogenic or not, but anyhow, met this couple up there. We were doing drugs. I was drinking from the morning to the night to the next morning with almost nothing to eat. And by the time the next morning came along, my body was starting to shut down and it was going into, like if you've ever had an anxiety attack, it was like an anxiety attack on steroids. It was just, I just knew I was going to die. I felt that. And I was praying to God, you know, God, please, you know, save me, you know, get me out of this situation. I'll never drink again. And I've said that a million times, you know what I mean? Hugging the poor friend.
We're in the toilet.
I'll never drink again. And I think we've all been there. Or if you've drank, you've been there. But this was different. And I was on my knees for hours going back and forth from the bed. And this is on my website, stephenpiazzanow.com, my full testimony. But I was going back and forth from the bed to this little ottoman, which I called my altar. And I went back and forth from the bed to the altar about 5 times that night. And God knew I was serious because I think it was about 14 to 16 hours in prayer. And I had an encounter with Christ and he came and I just knew that he wanted me to succeed. And even though I felt I was going to die, he gave me a second chance. And for, you know, maybe this is the reason to go share. Maybe it helps somebody. They can hear what I'm saying and be like, man, I could turn my life around. I've been an alcoholic for a long time. Maybe that can happen for me. You know, maybe that's why God still has me here. Maybe it's for music. Maybe, I don't know, but he still has me here for a reason. And I've been sober for, in June, it'll be 4 years. So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
In fact, today I'm wearing this, I got my 1 year sober bracelet on. So, it's good to celebrate yourself sometimes, you know, in recovery. So.
Well, and I think that celebration comes with the abundance that does happen, you know, mm-hmm. and it is available to everyone. And, you know, thank you for being vulnerable about that. I think so many mm-hmm. people can relate if mm-hmm. either they're going through it, that watch or someone they know, like addiction's touched everyone in some way, shape or form,
no matter what it is. Yeah.
And we're all probably still a little addicted to something.
Almost everybody's got a vice to something.
Right. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just, what are you going to choose? Okay. Mm-hmm. Mine are some of my daily spiritual practices. And to be honest, you know, hey, this isn't my first cup of coffee.
Right. This morning. Right.
I looked at the little lady and we were up and joking and watching stuff and went to bed a little bit later than usual because she's off this week. And then I woke up and I'm like, oh, head pressure from all the rain we've had where we live. And I'm like, oh, can I just have a cup of coffee? You know, so, hey, I still got my things, but it's not the stuff that is harming or going to kill me or let alone the detriment to my family. When you were sharing, like, it took me back to those moments lately. I've been mm-hmm. recalling the times that or the one time in particular, not getting my kids to school. You know,
there's a,
like, literally getting them dressed, feeding them, loading them up, and then getting in the car and going, wow, I can't drive. The next morning, you know. And
it's a wake-up call there.
Yeah, they my oldest remembers that, my youngest somewhat. And it's like, yeah, it's still tough. But I keep those things close because it reminds me how quickly I would go back.
Yeah.
You know, because like you, I was amazed when I finally was like, oh, I'm going to start taking care of myself. Hadn't been to the doctor and I don't know how long. You know, hey, doc, I'm in recovery. I've been sober over a year and a half. And, you know, please, let's do the full workup. Your heart's good. Your liver and kidneys are good. And they're like, what? Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Cause I remember that. Cause I wasn't a guy that would start early in the day, but it was how I always ended my night. You know, my
pounding them.
Yeah. 30 pack of beer was nothing.
So beer was your choice.
Near the end, okay. It got justified. It was a justification because, it's mostly water, you know, right. Which I think is probably why I didn't, because I didn't go to treatment. It wasn't an option. I didn't have the money or insurance and I was, a primary breadwinner at that point, having already gone through my divorce. And I was amazed that I didn't have any issues. I mean, I remember... This is the first time I turned back to prayer, like of not wanting to have a seizure or something. Mm-hmm. All these things that can be very dangerous for someone in long-term alcoholism, let alone forget any other drug, opioids. You need to go and be supervised and under medical care and detox properly. You know, with something like a Suboxone wean off or whatever it is, under medical supervision. And I never recommend like our path of just like no treatment. It's like it would have been a great option, but I think back and I hold those things close. Mm-hmm. To remember that it's like, you know, we're two men that we want God to work through us. But I also know I can sit and be persuaded and was persuaded pretty quickly to use a Bible analogy by the serpent and that devil, so to speak, will speak to you in whatever form really quick.
For sure, yeah.
You know, knowing my, you know, it's okay to have one drink or, you know, women was an issue there for a few years and all these things that it just. I know it's empty.
Yeah. Justification or an addict will justify something just to get his fix. Right.
Yeah.
So they're really good at that.
Yeah.
It's a miracle. I doing ride sharing. I drive a lot of people to methadone clinics and I generally can tell when they get in the car, if I'm going to be driving them to a methadone clinic. And I was talking to, and these people are just great people. You know what I mean? They had a hard road, man, and they made some bad choices and that drug just annihilated their body, basically. So instead of heroin, the system gets you on methadone. And I was talking to this one lady and I said, so how long have you been coming here? And she goes, I've been getting methadone for 30 years. Like 30 years? What? I thought the program was supposed to like try and wean you off of this. I feel like they're just taking advantage of you money wise, you know?
Yeah.
And that's a whole nother, you know, topic for the pharmaceutical industry. It's like, oh my gosh.
If you want, I can dig into, cause I work in and around this, like, you know, it's this idea of harm reduction, which, hey, I support that. I'm talking about that when someone goes in and detoxes a medication, but then you wean them off and give them a chance at full abstinence and sobriety. But yeah, my boss, Flynn Anderson, who's also a mentor at Parents and Addicts in Need, the nonprofit, he was on it for 2 years and he couldn't kick it. He literally went in and in the way you shouldn't and just went, stick this up your, you know what,
right.
Wow. I'm done. And, you know, he ended up having a psychotic break. Cause if you're on methadone, good luck finding a place that'll detox you. It just doesn't happen. And then, you know, a lot of opioid addicts now, I mean, I saw it in California. You can do it like Teladoc and get Suboxone. So it's still an opioid.
Yeah.
And granted, I get it. You know, it's not going to be what's out there on the street or loaded with fentanyl. Or even if you are a fentanyl addict, like, good luck. You got maybe 6 months to a year before you're gone. And so to me, it's really sad because it's become like an attack on the recovery process and abstinence. It's like, nah, you know, you don't have to. And I'm not judging people that, because there are some people that's going to be their path. They're going to need that long term.
Yeah.
They just are. But like, give them a shot at it first. Like, hey, if you know, let's try a year, let's see, and really be engaged and connected to a community and involved and really exploring what they love about life. Because the sad part for me with methadone or someone with Suboxone, you're not, those methadone people, they like you drive them.
Yeah.
They're stuck.
Yeah.
Like, it's sad. You want to go to Hawaii with your family, you forget your methadone, you're messed.
That was actually brought up with one of the girls. I was driving her husband and wife and some other friends, I think, were going to Vegas. And she's like, oh man, I'd love to go to Vegas, but I can't miss my methadone, you know, thing or whatever. And then I was talking to this, another person, and they couldn't go on a vacation. I forget where it was, because of their dialysis, you know, just, and then unfortunately I start thinking, you know, selfishly, I was like, man, I'm so glad I don't, you know, yeah. But my heart still goes out to these people. And I don't know exactly how methadone works, but isn't there a way you can like take less dosage? Can't you get off of that?
You can wean off.
Yeah.
Like literally till like, you know, it's almost clear.
Okay.
You know, so there are ways, but
they got to want it probably.
Yeah. Well, and granted, like you said, if this is in these methadone clinics are always posed as treatment centers, they're not treatment centers. They're not doing anything.
Like, it's so you don't like have a withdrawal.
Yeah. And you're right. They're predicated on that's how they make money. Like my mentor, Flynn Anderson, he literally was like, yeah, I would go in there because you're supposed to do a counseling session. He would say, stick it up your you know what, right, about a magazine for 45 minutes. And then when the clock, he would look up at the clock and go, we're done. And they go, okay, see you in 2 weeks.
Wow.
So it's not.
And he ended up having something go wrong.
Yeah, he got 2 years in and said, forget this, I'm done. He nodded out in traffic one time. And, wow. You know, and luckily it was, you know, because he was on it and they, you know, took medical attention and everything else. But yeah, it's you're strapped to it.
Yeah.
Like you still are. You still, if you're having to go daily, it's no different than us going to the bar or the dealer or whatever else. Like you're still stuck in a way of life. And to me, that's the disheartening part of it. Mm. Plus people always safe supply. No, it's safer. Like these are still opioids.
Yeah.
There's people that
it's just legalized.
Yeah. Basically. And it's overseen by the government and everything. And ask like if one of these people that you transport was willing to talk about it, like, have you had any issues with constipation? Have you had like all heart issue, all these other things? It's still an opioid.
Yeah. Right.
It's not harmless. This is not, it's safer. But there's nothing safe about it. It's like people that have safe sex. There's nothing safe about sex.
Right.
Pregnancy, STDs, all that can still happen.
Right.
It doesn't matter. You know, so I think there's just a lot of illusions. And again, I'm not judging anyone. And I have friends that are through that Suboxone process and weaned down or whatever, or ask my opinion. And I always say, give total sobriety a shot, because guess what? In abstinence, you have ultimate freedom.
Oh yeah.
You're not sitting there. This other buddy of mine, Joey, was talking about when he was on Suboxone, he's like, oh yeah, I would get like 10 minutes away from the house and freak out and go back and have to make sure I have it. Cause they were sublingual. So like little strips put under the tongue.
Okay.
And he was like, yeah, I couldn't go anywhere without that.
And not only that your body would say, hey, brother, I need this right now. But now you're getting your mental involved too, because your mental can play a huge role. I mean, just having an anxiety attacks, you know, I have a little coach bag I pick around. I don't really have anxiety attacks anymore, other than when I was on, you know, an alcoholic. And when you don't drink for a certain amount of days, you have the shakes and you take one and calms you down. But every once in a while I'll get an attack, you know, a mild one. But if I forget my bag, my mind starts racing out, dude, what are you gonna do? What, you know what I mean? And then your mind starts playing tricks on you. So
yeah. Have you dug into the archives of past Knocking Doors Down podcast episodes? The Knocking Doors Down podcast archive is available to you for free. Check it out. Here's a snippet from when Charlie Sheen was on the podcast.
AA is not the best place for a famous atheist. I kept looking for that fucking chapter. What, you know? So yeah, but it's not a one size fits all.
Sure.
You know, it's like saying that we all think the same, like our brains are built the same. They're just not.
Right.
There's such uniqueness involved.
Check out this episode and so many more in the Knockin' Doors Down archive. And while you're at it, hit that subscribe button, give this video a thumb up, leave a comment, and share with somebody else that you know will get value out of the Knockin' Doors Down podcast.
I mean, think back too to times when you had the shakes. Like, I remember this one time, and I literally was digging for change enough to buy the cheapest form of alcohol I could at the convenience
just
store
to get those things.
And when I reached in, I'm shaking. And when I reached in and grabbed it, it was like,
yeah,
hand steady. And it is so much a part mental, of that yeah. mental process. And, mm-hmm. and thus, especially us with alcohol, and people hate when I say it, phenomenal anxiety drug. That's what it does.
It calms you down. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, people say, oh, you make stupid decisions on when you're on alcohol. No, you make decisions you would have, you didn't make because you understand the anxiety and everything surrounding the consequences of.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, oh, I want to go talk to the prettiest girl in the bar.
Yeah.
Well, no, my anxiety, I'm a loser. There's no way she would be. You have a couple drinks or something. It's like,
you're liquid courage.
Right. Yeah. You're the most wonderful guy in
right.
the world.
Right.
You know? But anyway, let's jump back into your story, you know, cause I saw you perform a few times. I mean, was it always with music too? A couple drinks before getting on stage and everything else?
Well, yeah, I have quite a few stories with that too. definitely I would try and have a couple drinks to loosen up. I could go on stage sober, but, you know, that just wasn't my choice. Right. I would have wanted to be a little loosey goosey. But a couple times I remember this, we were playing this 4th of July, concert in this court. And, this was when I was signed with, Chris Ricci, LLC. Mm-hmm. And we showed up, set up the stage and everything at probably like 10, 11 in the morning. And we weren't going to go on till like 8 at night. So I was drinking the whole time. I mean, we all were, but I was the guy that was in the fast car, the drinking fast car. I'm going right to the finish line. So at about 30 minutes before, they're like, where's Steve at? And I was passed out by the pool, and my drummer come up and he's like, dude, we got to go on stage here in about 30 minutes. And I'm like, okay, well, I'll just jump in the pool. That'll wake me up. It's just like, where are you mentally? Are you thinking things out? No, probably not. So, yeah, but I would usually have a couple drinks, you know, and then really tie one on after. And obviously now I don't drink. And the older you get, you could talk to a lot of the famous musicians that are, you know, that started and had their heyday and then now are sober. Nikki Sixx being one of them. He's like, man, now I look back at it and I was such a sloppy bass player. Man, I'm so ashamed that people paid money to come see me and I was missing notes all over the place. Now I take pride and when I'm on stage, I want to be the best that I can be. You know what I mean? And that's for a lot of the musicians that I've heard say that are yeah. now sober, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah.
People pay money to come see you. Don't, you know?
Yeah. Well, and it's kind of all the horror stories of ironically like Guns N' Roses and when I went and finally saw them.
Okay.
And they were phenomenal. And Axl was amazing. It was like, oh, this is what this can do. You know, I'd seen Slash with like Velvet Revolver and stuff. So I knew what I was getting
right.
there. And I had seen Duff McKagan with his band. And so I kind of knew what I was getting there. But I was like, oh, God, is this dude going to come on stage on time? He was on time. They performed for like over 2 hours. He was phenomenal. It was like, okay,
right.
I get it. All right. And it's true.
Yeah.
It's true. And I mean, how sad would it be, you know, like if somehow he had survived a Nikki Sixx or back in the day, you know, Michael Anthony, one of my favorite bass yeah. players, Van Halen, remember yeah. he used to chug a bottle of Jack on stage. People are like, how sad would that be now in your 60s or 70s? And you
yeah.
know, and it's just like, just for people that are even sober curious, like when you hit 40, alcohol is so, it's bad for you, period, because it's a poison.
Right.
It literally is a poison.
Right.
But what it does to your body and how our metabolism changes, our hormones, everything.
Yeah.
It's so incredibly detrimental. So, you know, I've just encouraged people when they've asked, I don't, you know,
right.
go and
you don't want to force it on people.
But when they ask, I just lay out some of the facts. And I've had a few people like, hey, I went sober for a month and I feel pretty good. And it's like, all right, keep it going. And they're like, yeah, I actually went out, you know, or 2 weeks ago after 8 weeks of not drinking, and I had like one drink and I was like, I'm good.
Why am I doing
that? Yeah. Why am I doing
it? Yeah, right? Exactly.
It's like,
Yeah. I could write a book driving, you know, people around. You see all kinds of stuff,
right?
But I've had people, you know, that I picked up and I had to drive them to the bar in the morning because, you know, they didn't want to drive drunk, thank God.
Yes.
But they were having a hard time remembering like what happened last night. And I know my car's here, but you know, and I'd hear the whole story the whole time. Cause really taxi drivers, which is kind of what I, and bartenders are almost the same thing. People want to just talk to somebody and get out there, whatever.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we listen.
Right. And I think we're in an interesting time in society where if more people really embrace the fact that, like, look, the technology is there. Yes, so much that hits social media and the internet is a bunch of bull, but you can find the good stuff.
Of what?
Of connectivity to other people.
Oh, okay.
Or help.
Oh,
or
yeah,
knowledge.
For sure.
Like,
no doubt.
Like, I forgot how curious my mind was until, you know, the last 3-4 years. And it's just like, oh my God, this is at my fingertips. I don't have to go to the library, look through an encyclopedia.
Oh,
I can watch a video. I want to know how to do this. I'm not sure how to, you know, what's the best way to trim my trees? What's the best way, you know, I like to barbecue to trim my tri-tip. Oh, okay. You know,
yeah.
Like all these things. And also, with that said, I've met so many amazing people over the last 4 years that it's like, man, I could go to Florida, New York, New Jersey, Mexico, Canada, all over the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And I've met somebody and it's amazing that I could go and sit and hit a meeting with, go to church, just sit and have a normal fellowship with whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like all these possibilities are available.
Yeah.
Like they really are. And I think at the end of the day, it's what people want is some kind of connectivity.
Yeah. I mean, I get to see a lot of my cousins and relatives that I hardly ever see. I could see what they're doing on social media, you know, to have this at your fingertips. When we were growing up, I mean, a pager came out and we were like, dude, this is the greatest thing. Look, it'll beep right here. Watch this.
Right.
Now I just got to find a phone. So yeah, now we can do, and you can find a job through an app.
Yeah.
I mean, I used to, when I was down in LA looking for a job pursuing music, instead of going and looking for a job, I would show up at Labor Ready, which was a temp agency. And I'd show up at 5 a.m, they'd open at 5:30, and then I'd be the first one there. So I would get sent out and, you know, you dig a hole for 8 hours and they come back, or you come back and they give you $45.
Right.
I mean, it wasn't much, but it was all that I had, you know, and now I can just flip on an app and go, oh, wait, I can go drive and make money. Okay. Let me do this. It's just, I mean, technology is great. Could be used for bad things too, obviously, but
in abundance.
Yeah.
But I think that's just discernment. And I know since sobriety, my discernment, not just of choices, but people and situations it's just gotten better. It just improves.
Yeah.
Let me ask you more about music. I mean, you know, when I met you, it was, you know, it was rock. It was like maybe some of the 80s influence, but a lot of the 90s influence in there. Did music leave your life at any point?
Yeah. Yeah. I was, I was signed to a management team. My first band was a cover band. And then the next band I got into, I actually, after the cover band, I went to LA and pursued music and joined up with a band down there called Sundog. They were from Texas. And I remember every time you move it, it's expensive. And I had no money. I just said I worked 8 hours, got $45. So I had no money at all. And this band, I did an audition or put on a little show at this little bar. And I said, musician looking for a band. And this three bands came out and one band was like, oh man, you're just what we're looking for. And I was like, oh man, I don't want to be in a country band, but they were actually a really good rock band. So I moved in with them to Long Beach. And after 3 weeks, the drummer decided to go back to Texas to be with this woman. And I never went from an emotional high to an emotional low. I mean, it screwed me up. I wanted to put pain upon this guy. I mean, sure. Just because I don't know if you've gone to emotional high to emotional low so fast, but it'll just mess you up. So then I moved back to Modesto and I joined Hollow Point, which became Five Star Rising, got signed to a management team. And then my next band I was in was Coma Bloom. We were on, when you were in rock as a DJ, we were on your station quite a bit. And then I got signed to a band called Days After, and it was independent record label. And I thought, man, this is great. I finally got signed, you know. And there was some Broken Promises, and we did get on the radio for 3 months. We did a cover song of Turn Up the Radio.
Yeah.
And that was great, but they wanted us to write 15 songs in 30 days. And it was like, is this a joke? Because, I mean, that's a lot. I mean, it takes me like maybe 30 days to write 2 songs, maybe.
Right.
And so it just became a job and it wasn't fun anymore. And I already was an alcoholic, but I drank more vodka in that span of time than I ever have in my life. And it was miserable for me. So I got out of music. I didn't want to re-sign the contract. And then I was out of music until I had my near-death experience. So probably 3 or 4 years. And I just didn't have a passion. I didn't even pick up a guitar for probably 3 or 4 years.
Right.
You know, so it was just not in my life. And then when I had that near-death experience, God was like, all right, bud, it's time to sing for me now. Okay. Yeah. I've been trying to get your attention for so long, and now I have your attention. And, you know, thank God, because it could have been, I'm just going to let you go and I'll pick someone else out. Cause I'll be the first one to tell you, I'm not the best singer. I'm not the best musician. You know, I'm not the greatest to look at. He could have picked anybody. You know what I mean? He didn't have to choose me.
No self-deprecation.
Yeah. Why am I even here now? So thank God though, he did. And he gave me that second chance. So I want to make sure that I'm, you know, focused on everything that I'm doing. It's all about him and it's not about me. Me died on 6/12/2020. Now it's, you know, singing for Jesus Christ, you know. So
well, and we actually, that's how we reconnected. You reached out and invited me. Hey, I'm launching this where I'm gonna be doing some music live streaming of music and performing more. Right. And so we sat down and had a wonderful conversation about why you're starting down that journey, and we won't go into what we talked about there. I'm going to just put the link in the podcast description and your YouTube channel for anybody who wants to follow Steven. It's tagged here in the video too. So please go check out that conversation. And what's the journey now? What do we got that we're working on and putting out there? I know you're going to be doing some more of the live streaming, live performances coming.
Live performances are coming. We just shot a video at Cinecrown Studios, multi-studios in Sacramento. And that'll be coming out middle April-ish, towards the end of April. So once I release that video, that'll be the start of releasing my EP. So I'm really excited about it, man. It's been a long time in the making getting this EP done. And I have 4 songs on the website already, which is stevenpiazzanow.com. You can go and listen to those. And then I got a whole marketing campaign that I'm doing. So, just wanted to hit the ground running this year, 2024. Thanks again for having me on, man. I really appreciate it. Yeah. And, we're excited about what God has in store. So
I'm excited for you.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Well, you got a guitar.
I got the old firewood here.
Yeah. Let's play some.
Let's break out the firewood here.
You think the one mic will be enough, or
I think so. You want me to just tilt it down a little bit? Or?
Yeah, I mean, if you think that'll work, I mean, you sing strong.
I do.
You're not like me with a little mousy voice. I can't sing.
All right. Well, this song is called "Set Free," and this is my testimony, basically, in a song.
I was raised in church and gone from a rank.
We were there on Sunday, Wednesday, Friday nights. That was our way of life. I found out pretty quick that it doesn't take long.
Absolutely. All right, let's put it down. We're going to jump into some fun random questions here. This is the light in the mood, or actually sometimes it strikes other things. You had one superpower. What would it be and why?
One superpower. I wish that my superpower was I can be anywhere I wanted to and that fast.
All right, so like a teleportation.
Yeah, I want to be in Hawaii right now on the beach.
All right, after this interview.
Yeah, I'm there. Yeah. What about you?
I always said mine, when people have asked, would be like healing.
What
is that? To heal someone.
Heal, oh, wow.
But not in the way like necessarily extending. I was in the room when both of my grandmas passed, and so like it wouldn't necessarily be to have, you know, I understand God's time and I accept that, but right. maybe just to have them in less pain through the process.
Right.
You know, there's a lot, especially my dad's mom, there was a lot of agony and a lot of pain. So yeah.
Well, now I feel kind of selfish that you, since you shared yours.
But you never know, that teleportation might come in hand because maybe you got some information and you know someone's in trouble and, you know, then you go, you hold on to them, bam, take them out of a bad place. So it's all in how you look to use it. I forget what someone said one time and I was like, forget it. I'm never asking that question. It's like the most selfless, just beautiful thing. You're stranded on a deserted island. You have one movie, one music artist, greatest hits, and one book. What
one
are they?
One movie, one music. What is that?
Music artist, greatest hits. So it could be a band or a musician, and one book.
Okay, well, I'd have to go with the Bible because I don't read much unless it's the Bible.
Okay.
So we'll go with that one. And then greatest hits. Well, Journey, you can't go wrong with Journey's greatest hits. And then the first one was, I kind of went back.
One movie.
One movie. Oh, one movie. Man, there's a lot of great ones. There's a lot of great movies out there. I'm not sure. I'm going to have to think about that. Let me come back to that one.
All right, we can come back to it. So let's say you decide to write a book about your life and it gets licensed for either a TV show or a movie. Who would you want to play adult you?
To play me. Maybe Keanu Reeves, I guess.
I mean, he is a musician, so why not?
Yeah, yeah. You
know, he's a pretty damn good bass player.
Is that what he plays?
Yeah, he was in I forget the name of the band, but he played it not that long ago, actually, with them, I think, reunited with the guys.
I did see that, actually.
Yeah, talented dude. Yeah, I could see it. See, some people don't like him as that.
I don't understand why. I think he's a great actor.
Yeah, he has a style that you can tell, like, it's easy for directors and editors to work with.
Yeah.
Because it just flows.
Yeah.
It's just like, all right, this is how it goes. So,
So I would say for my movie, and there's a ton of them out there, but I think Casino.
Yeah.
I'm just fascinated with the mafia. I'm 100% Italian, and so are my parents. So, you know, and my papa was a preacher, and man, he loved watching gangster movies, man. Maybe that's where I get it from. But and then I follow a bunch of mafia guys on YouTube and stuff. So I don't know why I'm so fascinated with it, but maybe it's because my Italian heritage. Yeah, Casino was that's an iconic movie.
Oh gosh, one of the best.
Yeah.
I mean, geez, Joe Pesci was just, I think, the most underrated part of that movie. If people don't go, Casino Pesci, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's the first thing I think you should say. What's the best and worst advice you ever received?
Chris Rickey actually told me this, and this was the best advice I've ever gotten. Probably we were signed to his little management team and we used to play at the Fat Cat all the time, which was a club in Modesto.
Yeah.
And so he had given us like 500 tickets to sell and they were like $10, you know, but you know, when you're in a band, everybody's like, hey, bro, can I get a couple tickets for free? And, you know, and so we would give out like 300 free tickets. And so we played the show at the night and I was always the guy that went and talked to him afterwards in his office. And he's like, all right, man, how much money do you have for me? And I said, well, we have this, you know, X amount. And he's like, I gave you 500 tickets. Why are you only giving me this much money? Well, man, we had like a guest list and then, you know, whatever. He's like, yeah, I saw the guest list and it was like over 200 people on the guest list. What he goes, Steve, the nice guy will finish last every time. And I was like, man, that never left my brain. I was like, so yeah, I think that was probably the best advice I got because, yeah, I want to be nice and help everybody out, but at the end of the day, that's not going to pay my bills.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's the point of where is it detrimental?
Yeah.
You know, And it especially if it's the people like, hey, can I get free tickets? And then, I don't know, pick whatever service it is. And you're like, hey, yeah, can I get whatever? And then they're like, yeah, that'll be $80.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. Okay.
My manager's like, it's $10, bro. Everybody's got $10.
Yeah. Right.
So, and then the worst.
Yeah.
Come on, man. Let's just do it. I mean, everybody's doing it. What's it going to hurt? That's probably the worst. What's it going to hurt? Maybe waking up in somewhere I don't know with a horrible hangover.
Right. Oh, yeah, all too familiar. What's something people might be surprised to learn about you? Maybe a hobby, an interest, something that you don't talk about, you know, I don't know, basket weaving or, you know, what?
Well, I put down the basket weaving. No,
I gave that up.
Yeah. No, I'm a golfer, so I golf pretty much every day. I should be better than I am, probably, but I actually used to be in the PGA program.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, I was an assistant professional at Spring Creek Country Club in Ripon, and I used to teach junior clinics and give it individual lessons and stuff. And you, in order to, so the people on TV, those are golf, those are touring pros.
Right.
A golf pro would be like a head pro at a golf shop or something like that. And so that's what I went in order to get into that industry, you have to play 36 holes and basically shoot even par. And then once you do that, then you get into learning like the college stuff of it, how was the PGA founded and like the bookwork part. So probably people weren't looking at me going, I bet he's a golfer.
Well, I'm going to need to take my son up to see you so we can get some lessons, because we went to the driving range a couple of weeks ago and I was like, oh God, I have the worst like slide. Like it looks like it's going straight. Yeah. That sucker just wants to go right.
Yeah. Oh, I got that shot. I got that shot.
Yeah. My son doesn't listen to me. I'm like, no, straighten out your left elbow. And it comes back to, it's like, never mind. All right.
It's not an easy sport. That's probably one of the hardest sports, to hit this little tiny golf ball. Doesn't look hard, but go try and hit a golf ball.
Oh, yeah, and well.
And well, yeah.
And consistently. Like, you might, I remember one time I was playing in a tournament with my ex-father-in-law, who was in law enforcement, these other guys, and like, you're our ringer. I'm like, I'm going to be the worst one. Of course, we start out like this course on hole three, I think, what it was. And it was luckily a round-robin tournament. And I haul off and I hit that thing beautiful just off the edge of the green. They're like, why is your son-in-law BSing us over here? That was the only good swing the whole day.
Right, right.
It was like, guys, that's all I got. Trust me.
That's funny.
And I was trying really hard. Well, hey, this is what, like I told you before we started recording, the Jerry Springer moment here, close out the show. But anything through your life experience and maybe what you're experiencing now for anyone that's struggling, going through hardship, or has a loved one that you just, words of encouragement you might want to lend?
Life, you got to take day by day, for one. I understand you might want to have something you want to achieve in life, but you got to take it day by day. And a lot of people say, this is for the addicts, you know, I'm going to be sober the rest of my life. Well, let's start with today. So if you take it day by day, that's achievable. And yeah, if you're going through a struggle in life, man, I've been there, and I never really went down the suicide thought process in my life. I could think of one time where I was like, man, my life sucks right now. And I didn't even really think of it that time, but thinking my world is over kind of thing. It's not over. Life is about, you know, hills and valleys and seasons you're going to go through, ups and downs. That's just life. So, you know, bite the bullet, man, and keep trucking, because there are brighter days ahead. I mean, I'm a faith-based person. So if you're going through a hard time, you know, God is just waiting for you to talk to him. I mean, he's right there. Just say, Lord, I need some help today. You know, it's not going to hurt you to say a prayer.
Yeah, the things that have happened for me over the last 4 years, couldn't have scripted. It's unusual.
Yeah.
But hey, make sure you give Stephen a follow. Those links are, if you're listening to the podcast, they're in there. If you're on YouTube, You'll see that throughout the video when Stephen performed, there'll be that link right there. They're all in the podcast descriptions. Give them a follow, and I'm looking forward to the music. And I'm really grateful for this to happen.
I appreciate you. You know what I'm saying?
It's
so much.
One of those weird things, those gifts over the last 4 years.
It's definitely a God thing that we reconnected. Yes. Definitely, I believe.
I couldn't have made it happen.
Yeah.
That's for sure. On that note, remember, no outside solutions to inside problems, and keep knocking doors down.